Hello, everybody. Dwayne McCacken here with the Community From Within podcast. I'm recording this tonight, once again from my workshop. I recorded the episode of, which one was it? It's like episode 12 or 13 or something, about reserving your business name and registering your business name. And of course, that's the only episode I did in the workshop here. Everything else, I'm usually driving home from work in my car, and there's always extra background noise, road noise from the car. But that episode recorded here in the workshop was much more clear because, of course, we don't have that background noise. A little bit of noise here tonight. My dogs are barking away. They've been quite active the last few nights. So they're probably hearing coyotes in the field next door. So hopefully they're far enough away, I think, that it's not going to pick up on the microphone. When I first had the idea for this podcast, of course, I was trying to make use of my time driving back and forth from work, because I have, you know, almost, it's 45 minutes to an hour each way commute every day. But that's not the first time I had the idea of doing a podcast, and in fact, a friend of mine and I, as recently as this spring, had talked a couple times about doing something together, and we may still in the future, but I envision us being able to use this space. My wife and I, we bought this house and property. This is our third, we're going into our third winter here, so basically 3 years now. And we were very, very, very lucky and fortunate to be able to find this place and buy the property. It's from a friend of ours who passed away not that long after we bought the property from her. And it's such a wonderful place in many ways. Our friend, her name was Candy. She put a lot of love and heart and soul into this property. You know, from the house is just funky, is the word I think of it. It was built originally in 1971. And it was all like, you know, it was off the grid back then. It was a hand-built cabin, basically. They had no, you know, there's no electricity here. They had no power tools. He had a chainsaw and then hand tools. And then they added on in the front and then side and then back and then something else. And so the house is not your standard house to begin with. But we are also very fortunate that along with the house, there's a greenhouse for growing vegetables. Excuse me. And there's a workshop. And this workshop, I guess originally it was a glass greenhouse sort of thing, because it has a rock wall at the back, which was used as a heat sink. And some of the original glass is still there as windows, but then it was built up. It looks like a little house in some ways. It's funny when some people come to visit for the first time or something, and they see this when they come up the driveway, and a lot of people get the impression that we live in what's the workshop. Because in essence, it does look like a little house. Little do they suspect, or little do they know if they look inside this workshop, it's often quite chaotic. But I love this space because it's where I can, you know, this is where I can be creative. I love fixing things, I like building things, I like taking things apart, I like trying new things. The big project for me right now, I have parts all over the floor, is a chicken plucker. It's called the Whiz Bang Chicken Plucker. If you go online and you search for Whiz Bang Chicken Plucker, it's WHIZBANG, and you can buy the plans from that company. And it's, you can download the booklet. It says anyone can build a tub-style mechanical chicken plucker. Excuse me. And then you can scrounge the parts and stuff. I'm on a total tangent from where I wanted to be with this podcast, but in essence, I'm talking about self-sufficiency. So that's a good topic for the podcast anyway. We're talking about economic development. Well, self-sufficiency is a good one. My wife and I raise chickens. I mentioned that before, but you know, if it comes time to eat one, I do the process. I try to do the processing myself. In the past, if we had a lot of meat birds specifically, then we take those away to get processed usually. But if it's just a, you know, one or two or a handful, I'll do that all myself. And the worst part about doing a chicken is plucking the feathers. Not if you know what you're doing and you have the, you know, you have scalded water first after you kill it. Then the process is actually really simple, but as long as you do everything right, but it's still, you know, it's a very manual process. And that's a fine process manually if you only have a handful. But if you're doing a lot, let's say like this year, my wife and I, we got about 50 or 60 meat birds. If you're gonna do 50 or 60 to pluck them by hand, that's ridiculous. So, especially when you can relatively affordably build yourself a tub-style mechanical chicken plucker. And what I like about this design is it's with things that you can basically scrounge up, and that's exactly what I've done. I've bought very few things for this. The one thing I did buy is the fingers. There's these rubber fingers inside that actually do the plucking, that pull the feathers off the chicken. Basically, what I'm describing is if you're not at a spot where you can look this up, there's YouTube videos of people who build them and stuff, and it's pretty cool to watch. It's basically like think of a barrel, almost a barrel like a, like almost like a washing machine barrel, but there's rubber fingers sticking out all along the sides and the bottom of that barrel, and the bottom spins. And what happens is you scald the chicken, throw it in, it tumbles around with those fingers, and they're just very soft rubber fingers, but they rip, they pull, they pluck the feathers out. And you can put three or four chickens in at a time, and within 30 seconds to a minute, it's done. Rinse it off, and you're ready to go to the next step, which I will not describe here today. But so I've scrounged up a lot of the parts that you need. Like I have a aluminum plate that I need for the bottom piece. I bought the fingers online, and I bought what's called a pillow block bearing, two of them actually. But the electric motor, I scrounged up somewhere. I think my father gave me that. It was left over. It was for office. Ah, that's what it was. My father bought a garage, and he gave me this thing. It was like an old, really, really old brake lathe. Was that what it was? But I mean, it was very small compared to the like a normal brake lathe. Anyway, he had no use for that piece of equipment. And so I took the electric motor off it, and it's just the right RPM and everything that I need. And I have another hard part to get is the from the electric motor, you run a belt to a flywheel or like another pulley, and you need something to be a certain size and weight. And I found one on an old air compressor, and then just lumber and the barrel, of course, I had an old plastic rain barrel. I'm gonna put that all together. Not today, but hey, maybe I'll as I go through the process of doing that, I'll keep updating you, let you know, and then I'll post a video on YouTube. Like everybody else who builds one. Seems like the thing to do. Is there anything else I wanted to say about the chicken plugger? I have no idea where I got to this. Oh, yeah. That's why the workshop is so chaotic right now. No, that's a lie. Workshop is chaotic all the time. The reason why it's chaotic today is because of the chicken plucker more than anything else. But I've got stuff all over this place. All over this place. You try to clean it up and tidy it up, and you get to a certain point, and then, oh, you got to make something. So you stop and you do that, and then before you get to clean that up and go on to the next thing, or keep tidying up the workshop further, there's something else you got to build, or something else you got to do. I have too many projects in here. I've been paring down a little bit. We got rid of some stuff a couple weeks ago. We had a yard sale. I got rid of a lot of old tools, duplicate things that I don't need, stuff like that. That was taking up space. Excuse me, in here. But generally, I like this space. I feel creative in here. And the only thing, I guess, the only downfall is it's the bottom area is insulated, the top is not. But you can close it off in the wintertime. And I have a couple of electric heaters, so it's bearable. But I really got to put a wood stove in here because it's absolutely not warm, that's for sure. So I'm getting towards, here in September, getting towards the end of its comfortable usefulness until next summer, unless I just can heat it. But we're heading into winter. I don't think I have enough wood for this year for the house ready yet. So I still have more work to do there before I think about heating a workshop as well. But I said for this podcast, I want to talk about something else. So I think in the brainstorming session we did on to coming up with a business idea for the podcast major project. In as part of that process, I think I mentioned writing a book, possibly. Anyway, I was thinking of other podcast ideas in the future. If we're doing the art project, that's fine. But what other things could you do as a business idea? Or to make money. So there's that. I think I talked about the driftwood boats I used to make. Crafts, other ideas, lots of different things. But writing a book, writing as an author, as a way of making a living. I had that on the list because writing is something that I've always been passionate about. I love writing. I don't do enough of it. I haven't done much in the last few years. Used to do a lot more, certainly in university and in the years after. I used to write a lot of, nothing else, I used to write a lot of letters to local papers, letters to the editor, about a wide range of topics. Which I haven't done in recent years. But something I always enjoyed. I've always been big on, English literature, especially. I think I'll give a shout out to, why I love writing. It really comes down to, I'd say, three people. And that's, English teachers of mine. In high school, I went to what used to be Judith Kregnish High School, Judith Kregnish Consolidated, JCHS, and which is not there anymore. It closed in the year 2000, and then it was amalgamated with other local schools into what's now Dalbury Academy in Mabu. But back in Judic, I had an English teacher named Jerome Sullivan, and he is a very passionate individual about, you know, English and English literature. And you could tell when he was teaching it, you know, he took it seriously and he enjoyed it, and he, you know, it was his way of, you know, his method of teaching. He, you know, you could see the emotion in him as he taught, just ever so subtly. You know, he didn't go overboard with anything. But at the same time, it wasn't dry. It wasn't, you know, like a teacher going through the motions. It wasn't like that at all. You could tell Jerome really loves English literature. And two things with him back then, my love of writing as well as my love of like drama and theater and stuff. Every grade 12 English class used to put on a play. And you generally, you know, it's like one of these comedic murder mystery things. And that's what ours was. And I played a role in our play. And it was probably one of the greatest things I'd ever done in my life up to that point. I absolutely loved it. And Jerome was really big in that project. And the other thing was, he took our class to see Romeo and Juliet one time. He had like a live theater performance. And that's where I really started to understand and appreciate Shakespeare, for sure. Seeing it performed. And just, you know, it put it all together for me. And I really, really loved. To this day, I still remember the opening monologue. The opening monologue to Romeo and Juliet. Two households, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona, where we lair are seen. I'm not going to do the whole thing here now. But I do remember the whole thing. Then I went to a university. I went to St. Francis Xavier University, St. of X, in Antigonish. And there, in my first year, I took an intro to English literature course. And later, well, I'll get to that in a minute. The intro to English literature was with Phil Milner. And again, you know, another passionate individual, humorous, very funny. I guess the sense of humor that was different in some ways. Don't know how to describe it. But very enjoyable. You know, I remember, you know, it really built upon the high school English education. Just, it flowed really well from Jerome to Phil. And again, I still remember things from, you know, from Cadman's hymn through to, you know, Chaucer, you know, things that you have heard about, but I never really understood them very well. So I enjoyed Phil's intro to English so much that it was either my second or third year, I went back and I took another course with Phil Milner, and that was a creative writing class. And, you know, if it was Jerome Sullivan who through his teaching, got me to be, passionate about English literature. Then it was Phil Milner who got me passionate about writing. And he, his writing class was absolutely fantastic. I loved it. And it was one of these, it was a small class, like almost like what we call it, seminar class. There's only like, what, 8, maybe 10 people in the class at the most. And it was great. It was a good mix of people, great bunch of people that we're in the class with. Great, brilliant minds, people who just had, like it's like when you look at a library or a bookstore, it's hard to imagine all these different stories and ideas, but it's because they're coming from all these different people. And it's just fascinating, because as you write a little bit yourself, you almost kind of have your own style, or that's what the writing courses and the classes are about, is trying to break you out of that style and learn about the other styles. But just being exposed to them just so in such a raw form, you're basically getting everybody's sharing, their first drafts of things in many ways. It was really neat. I really enjoyed it. The structure of the course as well as the material. And then I can't remember if that was second or third year, but in my third or fourth year, I took another creative writing class, and this time was with Douglas Smith. A little heavier on the poetry side than just simply the general writing. Phil Milner's class was creative nonfiction writing, I believe. And Doug's, I think, was called just creative writing. I don't know that it was nonfiction specific, but maybe it was. Anyway, if Jerome taught me love English literature, Phil taught me to love writing it. Doug taught me to understand and appreciate the craft and the work and the effort that goes into it to hone it. Like that's not to say I'm good at what my writing is. I'm not a good writer. I'm not saying that, but I understand the work that I would have to put into it to be good. Not that I ever could be, but am I making sense here? To write something, it's like when you read a really awesome story, even like an O. Henry short story, or a poem like Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven, or a great book, any great book. That's not the first draft. That might not be the second, third, fourth, fifth, 100th draft. Like, there's so much work. And that's what I, when I was doing my writing in Phil's class, I would, take my time and I'd go over things and stuff, but certainly I was not putting the kind of effort into it that I needed to. Because I didn't like that. I didn't like it. I almost had this attitude, if I wrote something, like let's say we're writing poems, if I wrote a poem and I finish it, I'm changing as I go along, but when I finish, then I'm finished. It's done. I can't go back and touch that and mess with that anymore. If I'm going to, then it means I have to start over and write a different poem. Excuse me, that's the mentality I had. So it was really in Doug's class where I learned more about that honing process to go back and revise and throw parts out and That's one of the. That was actually. I remember something very specific. I wrote a poem, and we. This was even a smaller class. There was only like six or seven people in it, if I remember correctly. But you would read one or two things every class and share with the group. You read out loud. I remember reading this poem that I read, and I remember Doug's reaction. He was just very happy. He really enjoyed it. He complimented me on this, whatever the structure and the meter and this and that and whatever it was. And for a split brief second there, I was pretty proud of myself. And yeah, I thought it was pretty good too. And so then Doug says, "But can you expand on it? Can you do this and that? Maybe if you did this, it might be better. Just think about that." And it's the age-old story, of something, A good teacher does that the proper way. And he did it the proper way. He made me realize that, how's he, there's something there. I thought it was done, but he said, "No, there's something there." That's what he said. Can you gotta expand on it. You gotta make, like, he was trying to tell me I had a sapling and I needed to turn it into the tree. And that dispelled my previous belief that if I just completed the poem, it was already the tree, not a sapling. So, to this day, that was like 2005, 2006, maybe. It's 2019 now. And it's still, like, it still eats at me sometimes that I haven't finished that poem. Like, I'm going to, I know I am, but I haven't figured it out yet. There's something to, he was right, there's something in there. And I want, even just for my own, for me, I want to do that. Oh, I just had an idea. Maybe I'll do that for the next contest. Because that's what this is all about. I've been off track. Oh my goodness. Been talking for 27 minutes here without getting into the muck, the meat and potatoes of today's episode, which is the CBC Literary Contest, short prize contest. I was talking about all these ideas and how to make money, the beachcomb boats, knitting scarves, whatever the business idea might be. We settled on the air project, but I thought that over time in the future I would do other podcasts about these other ideas, just to give you an idea of what the process was and how I would go about it. And so writing a book was one of the ideas. And it's because I was, as I've been talking, rambling about my passion for it all, I came across something the other day, and it was an advertisement. It was in my, it was an email or something about it, but the CBC Literary Prize for short stories. CBC, which is Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, it's our public broadcaster for radio and television here in Canada, like the BBC in England, and like the what is it, PBS in the United States. Or NPR on the radio side, I guess. But CBC have, I believe, three contests per year. One is for, I believe, creative nonfiction. One is for poetry, and one is for short stories. Fiction, apparently. Doesn't have to be fiction, I guess. Just a short story is a short story. And I seen this, and the idea popped into my head. Well, first of all, I thought, oh, interesting, because there's a prize. It's like $6,000 first prize. There's other runner-up prizes of like $1,000 each. It's like, just for a short story. Of course, you know, well, there's more to it than that. But then the idea came, what about that writing a book idea? What if I use the writing a short story as an idea for the podcast to talk about it? And so that's why I thought I would do. If you are interested in the same thing yourself, the deadline is the end of October 2019. And if by the time somebody actually listens to this podcast, it's past that, it's in November 2019. It's next spring in 2020, I think April. That's when they open up, I believe, either the poetry or the creative nonfiction, I'm not sure, and then later in the summer is the other one. But there's the three contests every year. And I thought I would just use that as an excuse to finally get back into writing a little bit. And also, I'm putting that out there in this form. I'm saying this to you in the podcast as accountability for myself. I said I'm going to do it. Now I'm going to do it. And yeah, and so they're strict on some rules. Word count, for example, I was reading about the word count for the short story has to be under 2,500 words, and that even includes the title. And they use, you know, just when you, if you, let's say you're using Microsoft Word, and you click on the word count, that's what they go by. And if you're over by one word, you're disqualified. They don't count you. So there's other rules, like, you know, it can't be anything published. So let's say I had some short stories out there, but I had them published somewhere in any form ever, even online. You can't use that. You'll be disqualified. So it came to mind back in 2005, in the summer of 2005, I was in Botswana, which is in southern Africa. It borders South Africa, Zimbabwe, Namibia, and Zambia. And I was there on an internship through my university and the Cody Institute, which is part of the university. And I think, you know, someday I'll talk about that experience in a podcast, because I was there, you know, essentially because I was into development studies, and I was there to work with a non-profit organization. But the point is, while I was there, there's a number of weeks where I just had a lot of long evenings by myself, trying to think of something to do besides watch television at the place I was at. So I started writing, and I started writing this down, this idea. It popped into my head while I was there. It was actually a story about home, so maybe I was a little bit homesick in some ways too. But the story, I'm not going to say anything about it, obviously, because that might constitute publishing to a certain degree. So I don't want to disqualify myself. But I wrote it. I wrote like three or four chapters, actually. I wrote four chapters, and I stopped. And then I ended up, you know, came home, and other things happened in life. I went back to it a couple of years ago. I wrote another chapter or two. Had some more ideas about where to take it, where to take the story. Excuse me, allergies are acting up. I'm here. One second. So, yeah, my allergies are acting up. I'm here, and I'm sorry if my voice is a little nasally this evening, more so than usual. So I was there, I wrote the story, I added on to it, Haven't touched it since. I don't know where to go with it next. It's like it's kind of weird in some ways. I guess that's the problem. I kind of see the middle and the ending. I'm having a hard time with the beginning. And it's like the only, okay, so just write the middle and the ending, Dwayne. I can do a summary, but which I have in some ways, but I need the beginning. I need the characters and development so I know what to do with them in the middle and the end. It's just, it's a really weird place I'm stuck with this. And I'm stuck with it because I don't write enough to actually do it. I'm not practicing this craft. But the idea popped into my head, why not use this short story contest? Write a short story of that story. And the thing about short stories is this, like, people might assume a short story is easier to create than a novel. But it's not. It's actually exponentially more difficult to be a good one, you know? Because with a novel, let's say, I mean, there's no limit to how long, you know, really it could be. And you have all the time in the world to do what you need to do. A short story, you know, obviously in the contest, there's an actual word limit. A true short story, you know, doesn't necessarily have to have a, you know, it can't have, you know, 150 pages or more, obviously. That's not a short story. A short story is meant to be a few pages or something. But that's it. You mean you encompass an entire story in just that few pages. How do you develop your characters? How do you do anything? And that's where, you know, the honing comes into effect. You have to hone it down, hone it down, hone it down. You end up with that, you know, sharp piece of material. And so I thought, what if I could take this story that's in my head and make it into a short story? If I can do that effectively, that will both A, illuminate the path where I need to go with the book idea, but also, you know, simply encourage me and motivate me to continue writing. So I'm going to work on that in my spare time in the month of, well, I got September and October pretty well to do that. So that's what I'm going to do. And I'll have to go through all the rules and read about it. If you're listening to this and you still have time, just Google CBC Literary Prize. It'll take you to a website. You click the link for the short story prize. It should be a link there that says now open for submissions or something. There is a fee. There's a fee. It's $25 per entry. You can send 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 short stories in, but you have to pay the $25 fee for each one. And they get, you know, thousands of entries every year. But, you know, it's a fun thing to try. So, that's what we're going to do. And after, you know, after it's done, after it's over with, at that point, how does it work? I think if you're selected for the short list or something, or if you win, let's say, hypothetically, then I think either you're allowed to publish it yourself in other places, or you have to wait a year first. But either way, CBC do have the rights for 1 year, I believe, for publishing and stuff. After that, you retain all the rights and stuff. But either way, however it works, as soon as the contest's over, if I haven't won it, obviously, or even if I did, I'll look at the rules and I'll publish the short story that I'm going to write on the blog, on the website at communityfromwithin.com. Can't publish it right away because obviously it would be a published content then and disqualify me from the contest. So I'm not going to do that. checking my notes. I made some notes on my phone earlier about what I wanted to talk about tonight. I think I covered everything. Excuse me. And it's getting late. It's almost 11 o'clock. It's 11 o'clock. This is, what, Friday night, September 6th. So Hurricane Dorian is approaching, you know, off the coast of, I think, Rhode Island area by now. Supposed to hit landfall in the Nova Scotia region, southern Nova Scotia, possibly as early as tomorrow afternoon. And as tomorrow overnight and Sunday morning approaches, that's when it's going to get to this area. And it's, nobody knows what exactly is going to happen, where exactly it's going to go, or how big or strong it's going to be. But it, some reports are saying it has a lot of potential to be dangerous and a very bad storm. So hopefully this, hopefully it's not. Hopefully it passes. And tomorrow I got a long day of, you know, tying things down, battening down the hatches, as they say. Putting, you know, for the chickens and the power will be out Saturday night for sure. So then it just depends on will they be able to restore it on Sunday, because the way the storm's looking, it could be a lot of power outages all across Nova Scotia. So we might not have power for Sunday or Monday, let's say. So we're going to be filling a lot of buckets of water for the animals, so we have lots of water on hand. And yeah, just a lot of work to do tomorrow to get ready for that. They canceled the Mabu Farmers Market for Sunday already. So Good Boy Dog Treats will not be there this coming Sunday to sell the dog treats, but we'll have them at Weed's Variety soon. Check out goodboy.ca. Who knows, by this point, whenever I get this podcast out or whenever you're listening to it, goodboy.ca will tell you where you can buy those spent grain dog treats. That, I think, is bringing us to the conclusion. Did I talk about all the things that I wanted to talk about? I believe so. I think this is good. This is good. Good. This is a good place to end. So, thank you for listening. If you have any questions, comments, or other ideas you want to share, please go to communityfromwithin.com and use the contact form there to send me a message. And yeah, take care, everybody. Cheers.